Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Insofar as the court has said that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness involve the very most fundamental things of people, that this matter is one of those most fundamental matters. I think inasfar as the court has said that there is a penumbra that exists to encompass the entire purpose of the Constitution, that I think one of the purposes of the Constitution was to guarantee to the individual the right to determine the course of their own lives, insofar as there was perhaps no compelling state interest. And we allege there is none in this case.
That's Attorney Sarah Weddington arguing for penumbra, for shadows in the Constitution of the right to privacy. In 1973, the Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade, on its anniversary this Friday afternoon, January the 22nd, we're getting various perspectives on Roe v. Wade and legalized abortion in America. Joining us for a Supreme Court and a legal perspective on the subject, Ed Meese. He's a regular guest. He's 75th Attorney General of the United States, Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow Emeritus for the Heritage Foundation, Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. Ed, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Thinking back to the early 70s, the time leading up to Roe v. Wade, was the court reflecting popular opinion? Was there a big popular foment for legalized and unrestricted access to abortion?
I don't really believe there was among the public generally. You know, different states had handled it in different ways, and I don't think that there was much, an awful lot of public attention, but there was a determined group of special interests in this field, and I think they were the ones that were pushing it with the court.
What was the court's reasoning here to kind of review for us how they arrived at their decision in Roe?
Well, actually, to be honest with you, there wasn't any reasonable legal reasoning. They kind of made it up, and they invented something called a right to privacy that they found in the Constitution, which, quite frankly, I've been studying the Constitution for almost 60 years, and I've never found that there.
How did they apply it to the particular case of Roe v. Wade? What did they say about the case itself with respect to that, as you say, invented right to privacy?
Yeah, well, I think what they did was they claimed that this woman had a right to privacy, and a right to, as a part of that, was a part then to make her own decisions as to what happened to her body and that sort of thing. And they totally overlooked the idea that there was another life involved.
Now, what was the general reaction in 1973 to that January decision of the court?
Well, of course, among many people, particularly those who were Bible-believing people, there was absolute outrage. Among many legal scholars, there was a total surprise and a feeling that the court had really kind of gone off the rails by inventing a right that never existed in the Constitution, and that the court was somehow pandering, if you will, to a group of people who had this this outlandish idea of individual rights that had nothing to do with the general concepts of society.
Did you mention the legal scholars who were kind of stunned at this? Were they outspoken about it at the time, or was that more of kind of an internecine conversation about the court's decision?
No, I think there were a number of people at the time that spoke out about this. It followed a case of Griswold against Connecticut again. And it was part of actually a studied stratagem, if you will, of people who started with the Connecticut case and then brought it forward to Roe against Wade. And in a sense, it was I won't say a conspiracy, but it was almost a well-thought-out scheme in order to ultimately bring this about.
So the parallel today would be kind of seeking for massive social change, redefinition of marriage or something like that,
That's right, through the courts. As a matter of fact, this is one of a series of cases, if you will, over the 200-some-odd years of our existence that where they're just bad cases. You know, the first one really was Dred Scott, which sanctioned slavery. This Roe against Wade was another in that line, and of course today the most recent one was indeed the case that allowed that mandated same-sex marriage.
What the court continued to, so to speak, double down on its Roe decision in subsequent decisions. Tell us about that.
Well, there were subsequent decisions that came up. Webster was one, Casey was another, and in each time there were further, two things had happened, quite frankly. One, public opinion was more and more against abortion. And secondly, there were more legal scholars who had come to the position that Roe against Wade was the wrong decision. And each time the court found some way to, I would say, slither through and reaffirm the Roe against Wade decision. And in many cases, it was quite a surprise because new justices had come on the court, judges who were claimed to be constitutionalists, and yet they voted the same way the judges had, although not as many of them, quite frankly. It was more 5-4 decisions rather than 6-3. But nevertheless, the court did have a majority to continue to uphold Roe against Wade.
So how do you respond to someone, and this is often heard nowadays, even among those legal scholars and legal minds who support abortion but are honest enough to say that, yes, Roe was a terrible decision and the subsequent decisions were also ill-conceived. But how do you respond when they say, nevertheless, we should still uphold Roe and this unfettered access to abortion?
Well, I think you say that just because something is wrong and has been done frequently doesn't make it right. And if that were true, then going back to Dred Scott, we would still have slavery in this country if that hadn't been corrected.
What is the biggest myth that you think persists about the Roe decision?
I think the greatest myth is that somehow this idea that a woman has a right to her own body, which is an absolute failure to recognize the fact that two lives are involved. And absolutely, there's this claim that, well, it may be necessary for medical reasons. If that were in fact true, then under the previous law before Roe against Wade, it would have been proper. But today, there's virtually no reason medically for abortion to be legal, and certainly there is no reason either morally or, in my opinion, constitutionally, for the court to uphold abortion by choice, if you will, or abortion for convenience.
A couple questions on kind of the prospect of Roe going forward. If it were, by some means, overturned, what would devolve in the United States with regard to abortion in the states?
Well, I think what would happen would be that the matter would be, if they were truly overruling Roe, then I think it would go back to the states, because matters such as this have always been decided by state legislatures. And then it would be up to the state legislatures. And quite frankly, I think that many states would outlaw abortion, because today you have an increasing public demand that is opposite to support of abortion. If you look at, for example, headlines this week, looking ahead to the march that's taking place today, headlines in the newspapers were the fact that particularly young people are increasingly against abortion.
Ed Meese is our guest. He's the 75th Attorney General of the United States. We're talking about the Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade decision. Get a little legal perspective on it on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade this Friday, January the 22nd. We'll talk with him a little bit more on the other side of the break. Then Janique Stewart will join us. We'll get an African-American woman's perspective on legalized abortion, a millennial's perspective with Johanna Johnson. And then Donald Trump was quoting from 2 Corinthians 3:17, where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. He was talking about American liberty. Is that what Paul was talking about? We'll answer that question with Mark Seyfried in the last 15 minutes of Issues Etc. Well, on a day like this, we need to remember that there are people all over who are still deeply concerned about the unborn and protecting life from beginning to end. One of those organizations is LCMS Life Ministry. You can find out more about them. They are devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in the church body and in the culture at large. LCMS.org/life. lcms.org/life. We'll be right back.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
LutheranReformation.org is the brand new one-stop shop for all things Reformation. It's your source for news, events, history, videos, activities, educational resources, and much, much more. New resources will be added regularly, each one designed to help you celebrate and remember the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Because Reformation 2017 is still all about Jesus. Visit LutheranReformation.org today. LutheranReformation.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this 43rd anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision, we are getting a legal perspective on that decision and its aftermath. Ed Meese is our guest, 75th Attorney General of the United States, Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow Emeritus for the Heritage Foundation and Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. Ed, let's talk about some of the medical and scientific advances and how they affect things. With the ability now to peer into the womb, is it harder and harder for pro-choice forces to make their case for abortion legally?
I think it is. It's harder for them to make the case legally. It's also, however, harder for them to make it morally, as people see that this is really a life.
If you were able for a few minutes to sit down with the late Justice Harry Blackmun, who wrote the majority decision in Roe v. Wade, how would you present your case to him that Roe was a bad decision and bad law?
Well, I think you would put it on two bases. Number one, you would say that when you really go back to it and look at the Constitution, there is no real basis for it, and this was essentially an artificial fiction made up by the court in order to justify the result. And the second way would be to say that since that time, we can see that both scientific information, the technological ability to look inside the womb, as you point out, but also more and more information has come to light as to why, from a practical standpoint, this was a bad decision.
Do you foresee a day, somehow in the future, when Roe will be overturned?
I certainly hope so, and I think it is possible as more and more people realize that Roe was originally decided, and as more information comes available about the whole technique, as more information comes about concerning life in the womb, all of these things, I think, point towards fewer and fewer people supporting Roe, but also, I think, people realizing to a greater extent that it was a mistake.
Are you hopeful in that respect when since Roe, there has been what has kind of been the incremental approach of the legal incremental approach of the pro-life forces to say, if we can't overturn Roe, let's regulate or let's get greater legal scrutiny on the Roe decision in other ways?
I think that what has been done is right. I think the incremental approach is always, as long as it's leading in the right direction, I think it makes sense. On the other hand, as these other cases have come up, And as there has been, as you say, incremental changes in the law in the right direction, I think sooner or later you come to a point to say, well, we really ought to go right to the roots of the thing and change the law. And I think that I hope that is ultimately the result.
Last year, Ed, Planned Parenthood was pretty much exposed, the largest and most profitable abortion provider in the United States, through a series of clandestine videos that exposed their trafficking in baby body parts. Do those kinds of things have an effect on the minds of justices?
Well, I would hope that they would, although even then, I think it is important that judges rule on what the law is. But I think that, in a sense, it gives the public a better understanding of what's really going on and how corrupt, if you will, the decision really was, and the kind of corrupt things that it authorized. And so I think that maybe it makes it easier from a publicity standpoint for the courts to go back and correct the law and bring the law back to what it really was, should have been, constitutionally at the time that Roe was originally decided.
Very recently, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton went on the record that the Hyde Amendment should be overturned. Why is she wrong there?
Well, she's wrong because, first of all, abortion itself is wrong from a moral standpoint. But beyond that, the Congress of the United States, which represents public opinion, I think was absolutely correct in determining that taxpayer-provided funds should not be used to subsidize abortion.
Ed Meese is the 75th Attorney General of the United States, Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow Emeritus for the Heritage Foundation, and Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. Ed, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.